Follow me down this deep, dark hole.
Welcome to New Horror Express, your fortnightly podcast chatting to the best indie talent the horror genre has to offer. I'm your host, Scott Murphy, and in this episode, I chat to Canadian director Rob Grant. We talk about his latest feature, Alive, which at the time of recording had just been at a couple of film festivals in North America and was ready to make its UK premiere at Grimfest, which happened back in October. We talk about how that movie came together, the challenges of working from material that was not Rob's own, which is the first time that he'd done that as a director. We talk about the differences between big budget and low budget filmmaking, as he's had various experiences on big budget films in the editorial departments. We also talk about the responsibilities of horror filmmakers, a conversation spurred on by his horror documentary, mockumentary, Fake Blood. The interview itself was slightly truncated because he was touring the film Alive at the time and was doing the interview from an airport and had to catch a flight straight after we had done the interview. So, yeah, but that doesn't affect the quality of the interview. There is still a lot of interesting stuff here, which I will let you listen to right now, listener. So here we go. Over to Rob.
Hello, Rob. Welcome to the show. It's good. Good to have you on here on New Horror Express.
Thank you very much for having me.
So, first of all, let's talk about your new movie, Alive, which I believe, Well, at the time of recording, will be have its UK premiere at Grimfest next weekend.
Yes, I'm very excited about that. I was there last year with Fake Blood, and so it's exciting to be back with a movie that's kind of completely different and a bit of a left turn compared to that one. So I'll be excited to see how people react.
Yeah. But how did you? I take it you must have enjoyed your Grimfest experience that you wanted to come back straight again a year after.
Absolutely. No, I loved it there. The audiences were super, super friendly and also really, really open to the weirdness that was Fake Blood and kind of outside the box. And then this movie is kind of like a knee-jerk reaction against the very cerebral nature of that last one. Alive is much more kind of survival horror, rock and roll. Very influential from like the Outlast style video games and stuff. It was kind of a chance for me to just kind of take things a little further than I normally would have. It's interesting because I kind of find myself, I get bored even with making my own stuff. So I kind of want to challenge and surprise myself as well. So I'll be curious to see if audiences respect that aspect of it as well.
So it's a very different movie indeed. Because it's not premiered in the UK yet, obviously I've not seen it. I know it's premiered at a couple of festivals in Canada before this, Calgary International Film Festival and Film Quest.
That's actually where I'm on. That's where I'm on my way right now. Actually, is Calgary to the screening tonight for that one? So we'll, fingers crossed that goes well.
So not many people have seen the movie yet, but has it been getting good reactions, do you feel?
Yeah. Every review we've gotten has, so far. I mean, you're always just waiting for the first bad one, because they always happen, and that's okay, especially when you're trying to do something a little different or a little unique or a spin on something, but it seems to at least have been approving of what we were trying to accomplish. I mean, we're still in the low budget range. Mm-hmm. It's very minimal locations, very minimal cast, three people kind of stuck in a derelict hospital. And so there's inherent challenges in storytelling there that I think we tried to attack pretty hard. So I'm proud of what we were able to accomplish with what we had, and it seems that the response has been pretty positive so far. But you know, you kind of always, you gotta block out some of the good just as much as you do the bad, and try and keep it.
Yeah. So how did the story come about for this one, the Alive? You say it was like a knee jerk reaction to your last movie. What made you want to make this story?
It came about because of my producing partner, Mike Peterson, who I did Fake Blood with out of Calgary.
Mm-hmm.
Their production company was approached by Chuck McHugh and Jules Vincent, who had written the script for the movie. And they wanted to come up to Canada. They were the producers on that, and they wanted to come up to Canada to shoot. And so they kind of made a partnership deal with my producing partner's production company, and they needed a director. Now, I have never directed something that was written by someone else before either. And so, you know, my initial reaction is, I don't know how I'm going to be able to handle that. But then that kind of went with the same theme of like, okay, I've had my experience having total control over everything. It kind of came in with the knee jerk reaction to try something completely different. It's like, okay, well now I'm going to try and take on someone else's script that I did not write, that I don't know all the intricacies and details of, and it was part of that, and that's kind of where it came from. We had a meeting with Chuck and Jules, and I think we all got along great about what we were trying to accomplish here, and they seemed to be okay with my idea of like, if we're going to do this, let's really go all out with it, and that was kind of the beginning. And then we ended up shooting that in Calgary as well, and mm-hmm. that was kind of where it spawned from.
What were the kind of challenges of directing something you hadn't written? Your previous, I believe, four pictures before this were all written by you, mm-hmm. as well.
Yeah, it's scary to take on someone else's work, not only because you're worried that you're going to screw it up, but also there's a certain element that is impersonal, I guess, mm-hmm. is the best way of putting it. You know, when I write stuff, it may not be what the movie is actually about, but there's always some sort of thematic route that I'm trying to work through in my personal life or something like that.
Yeah.
So the hard part for me was kind of just taking the script that I don't have this intimate connection with, and trying to, while still staying close enough to what the writers, Chuck and Jules, wanted to accomplish as well. So the challenge is just, it is just a bit more broad, and like, you're not as intimately connected, but you need to find a way to make it work for everyone. And then beyond that, it was also the first time I've worked with professional actors is the wrong word, but not actors that I have known personally in my personal life. It was the first time we used a casting director. So it was a big step up in a lot of those ways for me as well. And just making sure that, you know, I wasn't so used to my comfort zone of doing things in my own time with my own friends at a very low budget, you know, and just trying to prove that I was able to step up to the next tier, if that makes sense.
Yeah. How was the casting process? How did the cast come about? What attracted you to the three actors that you've got? And in particular, the Angus McFadden, who is, I mean, not an A-list star, right, by any means, but like certainly a known name from, you know, Robert the Bruce from Braveheart. Absolutely. And the Saw movies he was in.
Yep. It came about, that was Chuck and Jules were like fairly adamant that we needed to make sure that we had some sort of recognized names if we can. And it was like, to their credit, you know, the budget was not very large. It was quite small, in fact, but it was to their credit that they kind of pushed it to be like, well, let's try to elevate this anywhere we can. And casting was one of them. And so we managed to get the script to a couple casting agents out of LA, And then one came on board, and that was kind of the beginning where it was like, okay, now we got a list of people. Do we go approach? And, you know, that process takes its time because you got to send it out to people. They have to read it. You have to make offers. And it kind of, it just so happened that when it reached Angus, it kind of clicked with him. And he was our first actor cast. And it was also the most important role, you know, because without giving too much away from the movie, he's kind of, I don't want to say he's the villain, but he's kind of the anchor of the movie in many regards, and kind of guides the two captured patients through the story in a very specific way. And so it was nice that he kind of registered with the material. And, you know, we had a great conversation about what the role could be and should be. And I was also watching AMC's Turn at the time, and he was so great in that movie as well. And I was like, okay, I think this is going to work. And then from there, Thomas came on board after through the same casting agents, and we had a conversation. I had just seen Table 19 not so long ago, and he was so charming in that movie. I'm like, well, this is perfect. I want a guy who can't speak for the first 20 minutes of the movie to try and have to still emote and you know, give away his emotions to the camera without having to be able to say them. And then Camille actually came from Toronto, who me and Mike, my producing partner, when we were both attending the Canadian Film Center in Toronto. And so that was our main, as soon as we had those, it was kind of off running.
You must have had to very quickly build a very good rapport with the cast, because when a movie has such a small cast like that, you know, it must it relies a lot on them. So the director, you must have had to build that relationship quite quickly. And
it was it seems like all on the indies too, it's like they don't give you any rehearsal time per se. So it's really more about making sure that you take the time to just go and see them on, you know, go have lunch, go have dinner, go have a couple of drinks, like on the night before, the second two nights before, and just, you have to build some sort of a casual relationship so that when you do go to them on the day to ask them to do some of this really difficult stuff, even just trudging through gallons of blood, you know, you don't want that to come off as just a stranger giving an order. So yeah, it's always super important to make sure that you build some sort of relationship. I find when they're building relationships between themselves, though, the actors, they can take it different ways. You know, some might want to keep a distant relationship if they have to be a cold person to them in the movie. Some it doesn't matter. That seems to vary from movie to movie. But I do find that no matter what, it's important that I do a point that they trust me for when I request absurd things from them.
Yeah. Was it more difficult building the relationships with the actors in this movie, since you're previously saying that most of the actors on your previous movies were people that you knew, and this was outside people?
I think I at the beginning anyway, I probably projected more of that on me, where I felt maybe self-conscious about it, where there's an element of me being like, oh my God, why would these actors listen to me? They, you know, I've come from this low budget world. But as soon as you start working together, and everyone, as soon as it's usually after the first day, and you get people are start to look at the dailies, and you see people getting excited about the material that you get, and is that kind of anxiety usually goes away. And I think everyone's just there to try to make something interesting. And I think as long as the focus is switched to that, rather than, you know, who are you, what have you done, and you know, that's usually when things start to hit a really great stride. So that's kind of what my focus is usually on, is just trying to get everyone that's working to be excited as kind of I am about what we're trying to accomplish.
So that was just kind of more of a kind of projection on your part. There was no sense of any of the actors being like, well, I've been on this production. No,
never. That's the thing. It's like, as soon as you realize that they're not doing that, then it's like, okay, I need to stop stressing out myself.
You were saying earlier the production behind this was 775 Media with Mike Peterson, who's previously been on the show. How did that relationship come about? Was that through you editing, being the editor on Knuckleball, or was that earlier you met up?
So it's 775 and Vominos, which is Chuck and Jules company, the writers slash producers. So it's a combination between the two of them. But I met Mike actually. I had heard of Mike back in around 2012 because I had my movie Mon Ami screening the festivals around that time, and he had his movie Lloyd the Conqueror doing the festival circuit at the same time. Now, we never actually like ran into each other around that time, but I just knew about this interesting filmmaker out of Calgary. And then fast forward a couple years later, the Canadian Film Center has this director's lab where they take five directors from across the country for like a 6-month intensive. I was one, and it just so happened that Mike Peterson was another one. And that's where we kind of actually got like, oh, hey, we've kind of known about each other, but never met. And that was kind of where our relationship started. Then after the program ended, we went back to our cities of origin and kind of kept making stuff. And then it just so happened that he and Julian Black Antelope and Lori Venning kind of were creating 775 at the time and looking for some interesting smaller projects just to kind of test the waters. And that was when I kind of had Fake Blood kind of ramping up at that point. And that was the beginning of our working relationship. And so it was Fake Blood, followed by being Knuckleball. And credit to Mike and to Julian, is especially out of Calgary, is they're really trying to do this great independent scene that's a bit of collective, which I think it's really helpful because all the support to help each other's movies is the only way you can get stuff.
Yeah, there does seem to be more and more of a scene in Canada. I mean, you're something like the sixth Canadian guest I've had on, and you know, like I've noticed more and more horror films coming out of Canada in the last kind of 4 or 5 years.
That's awesome. That's great to hear. I mean, what me and Mike had always said is like, why is there not more of a collective like there is coming out of the States? Like, you know, back when the Duplass brothers were just starting out, the Joe Swansburg, they all kind of helped each other and worked on each other's movies, and I think that's what helped them all achieve mainstream success. And it felt for a very long time anyway in Canada here, it was very insular. It was like, I'm working on my project, you work on yours, and it'll be a competition. And me and Mike were always like, that doesn't make sense. We kind of all need to be helping each other out here.
Yeah.
And that was kind of the beginning of it. And then I'm Curtis Harder, one of my other producers on Fake Blood, was the first time I worked with him on that one. But now it's like the same. He's come on board for the Boat movie. He also helped produce Mike Peterson's Knuckleball. And it's kind of like, we're all trying to just make sure that we all make quality work together. And I think that's what helps elevate the quality rather than this insular competition.
Yeah, it's interesting, the internal politics as well, because I remember from the episode that I interviewed Mike, he was saying that the kind of scenes in Alberta and Ontario kind of mix, but Vancouver seems to be more of its own thing.
Yeah, and not a good way too. That's the thing. I feel like I'm a bit of an anomaly in the Vancouver scene for sure. It's always been more of a service industry.
Right.
A lot of the studio films come up to Vancouver to shoot, and then leave after 4 months, and so. That's where I made my living for a long time, because, you know, the money's good, it's quick, and then you're on jump on the, but there's not a real good fostered independent scene because everyone's too busy trying to make a living on the big ones. Whereas Toronto, I felt like, started off with a great independent scene, and then it turns out that the big studios also went there. So they had both. And then Calgary is the same thing. It's like, you have all these really talented crews that have been trained on the studio projects or the Netflix, you know, Hell on Wheels, all of these big shows, but they're still excited about the idea of doing these interesting things on the in-between shows. And I really do believe that Calgary is kind of like the where all the big independent stuff's going to come from out of Canada for a while, just because it's the lower tax breaks, the great crews, and they're not jaded. They still want to make interesting stuff and not just go for the best big gig.
You were talking about some of the bigger stuff there. I know that you've worked in the editorial departments of various big blockbusters, Deadpool 2 and things of that nature. How is that, like, I've asked a few people this before because a few people have been independent directors and also worked in departments in bigger productions. How for you, what is the difference between that kind of set and your kind of set?
Time is the number one. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's that triangle. It's like you get good, fast, or cheap, pick two, right?
Yeah.
And so it's Alive, I think we did on a 16-day schedule, whereas Deadpool 2, I think, had I can't speak so much to the days on that one, but on, you know, the War for the Planet of the Apes, it was like a 99-day schedule, and followed by a year worth of post-production where you could still get reshoots and stuff like that. So I think just the luxury of time to get it right, whereas on a 16-day schedule, there's definitely days where you're leaving going, I hope we got it. Yeah. So that would probably be the biggest one. Beyond that, I actually find that it's very similar. You show up to your job and you're expected to do, no one expects you to do anything other than the work you've been hired to do because you're in that position for a reason. Like you obviously, the quality of your work should not be tested. It's just kind of, you're here because you've made it here and that's that. The reason I even started getting into the directing was just by fluke. Is I was in the and on movies when I was first starting out, and you'd be working for 4 to 6 months, and then you'd be off for 4 to 6 months, and I would just get bored in the meantime and pick up a camera, and that's kind of where a lot of my stuff started happening. It just so happened that certain people were responding to my stuff, and it's kind of branched off into these two things. Like, I'm currently actually editor on a Lifetime movie of the week right now myself. And then, you know, I take my weekends to go fly to a screening of my stuff, and then I'll go back to work on Monday and keep editing this movie. And it kind of just ping pongs back and forth.
Yeah. So I was actually going to ask that, rewinding back how you got into being a director. Did you go to film school? What was the first thing that you thought, like, yeah, films? Films is what I want to do with my life.
In my grade 7 elementary school graduation, every kid was supposed to record onto a little cassette tape what their aspirations were. Mm-hmm. And this was in grade 7, and I said I wanted to be the next Steven Spielberg, and all the parents laughed. And so, without even knowing where it started, that was clearly, there was already the instinct there at the time that I wanted to make movies. I think it might have spawned from when my dad, who was a principal at the time, brought home like a camcorder from the school, and I would just start mucking around recreating Friday the 13th deaths or stuff like that. So that was probably the beginning. That tapered off a lot during high school just because of the nature of going through adolescence. Instead, it switched to skateboarding and snowboard videos. And then I'd still managed to get into my first year out of school. I went to the Capilano film program the first year out of high school for that. But I really didn't like it. I didn't like a lot of the classwork of it and the rigid the rules of all of the filmmaking stuff. So I left, actually. And I also wanted to be able to talk about stuff out of the movies. And I went and ended up getting a degree in philosophy from UBC after that. And then I just found that thinking about stuff, metaphysics and stuff like that, actually just started making me a better writer. And that's kind of what led me back into movies again.
Yeah.
And then it just so happened that in between sisters, my cousin at the time, because I was going to go back to film school, said, okay, I applied to the UBC film program. If I don't get in, I'll just take my tuition and make a movie over the summer. And then my cousin's, I'm going to hold you to that, and I'm going to produce it. And it so happened to get into the film program. And so he said, well, I guess we're making a movie, and two zombie movie yesterday. And that was kind of, started.
It's a pretty interesting start. Sorry, go on.
No, I was just going to say, it's a good story of perseverance, perhaps. And maybe not, maybe that, you know, I think film schools do have their place, but I think there's more something to be said about making sure that a little something about other than movies so that it informs mm-hmm. your process or your ideas a little bit better when if you do decide to come back to it.
To kind of give you outside influences so you're not kind of weighed down by being really cine-literate.
Did I lose you?
Just for a second, yeah.
Oh, there we go. So,
so we were talking about having kind of outside influences that weren't just cinema.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, yeah, so and so you think that that's a good thing, just going out there and making it, just trial and error.
I mean, I don't know if it works for everybody, because that first movie, I don't know if anyone's watched it, and it just got re-released actually by Darkside Releasing. I am fairly embarrassed by the movie. There's parts of it that I can watch and say like, oh, okay, that's, you know, that was a 21-year-old that didn't know what the heck he was doing yet, and there's parts of that I really admire because, you know, it's fun to break the rules when you don't know what the rules are, but then there's definitely an adolescence to the writing, to the shooting, definitely to my editing, which, you know, you don't really learn to cut the fat until after you do your first one and then realize how slow it is in certain spots. So, I mean, I'm not one of these people that could just pick up a camera and make something great. I needed practice.
But I mean, lots of people have done that and gone on to make great stuff. I mean, I'm sure not everybody's super proud of the very first thing they've done, even if they are proud of certain elements of that thing.
Mm-hmm. No, it's one of those cases where, you know, it was, I feel like it was made at a certain time in my life where I can forgive myself for that. It's just, you know, the goal should always, or at least for me, has always just been like, okay, we did that. Now it's time to try to make something a bit better. And you kind of just try to learn your mistakes that you made from the last one and not make those on the next one.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there's been a lot of development. Obviously, you were saying this movie seems to be got a good early reaction with some of the things, and Fake Blood got a good reaction as well, and seemed to manage to confuse a lot of critics about how much of it was documentary, how much of it was mockumentary, what was fact, what was fiction, which was obvious, I presume, something you did very deliberately.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's an important element to movies in general and what the audience's role is. You know, I think a lot of people don't realize how easy it is to get sucked into the fantasy of it all. And I think now more than ever with all the stuff in the news about, you know, fake news and stuff like that, I think it's really important to kind of be present about how far you should be immersing yourself into these experiences, because it can be dangerous. So I think there was just a lot of things that we were dealing with on that movie that just kind of, I think kind of just hit the, like what's been going on subconsciously with a lot of people right now. And we just kind of wanted to highlight a lot of that.
I presume you would not be too keen to reveal what the truest elements. I do wonder though, was the initial, one thing though I would be interested, was the initial tape, was that real?
Absolutely was.
Yeah.
1,000%. That I received that back after we started getting fan letters from Mon Ami, and that was, that definitely disturbed me because that was where it all started. Like, you know, what is my responsibility here? And that kind of just led us down the rabbit hole.
So that was the key inspiration for the movie. You received that, And then you ended up making that movie on the back of the thought process of receiving that, something like that.
Exactly. It's because, I mean, there's something in everyone's head who creates something that's to be consumed by the general public. I think there's something in the back of everyone's head being like, is this good or is this bad? Like, am I doing a disservice? And at least that's always been a very conscious thought with me. Mm-hmm. I've always managed to push it very far to the back of my head because I do think a certain part of it has to just be your job, stand, entertain.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's when you get stuff like that that you're like, oh, darn it. I really hope that something like this didn't happen.
Yeah. But, I mean, what is your feeling on that? I mean, isn't there a certain sense that, you know, media like that, like your film or anybody's horror film can influence somebody? They can't only be influenced like that. There's got to be other factors.
Yeah, I mean that's the hope, right? Is that you're like, well, this person was already unstable if they were willing to do that. But it becomes much more personal suddenly when they're like, yes, I did this because I saw someone do it in your movie. There's just something about that you kind of can't shake, the you know, just the personal connection that suddenly appears there.
I can understand that is difficult if you feel like you've directly inspired someone to do something terrible, even if that someone has a pre-existing condition, or you know, is already a bit wrong in the head. Yeah.
It gets dodgy, right? It's weird. It's like okay, we have bridges here in Vancouver that's every now and then get really clogged up with someone that's thinking about jumping, and you know, it's like 99% of the people are understand that this is someone that's very ill, and then you get the 1% of someone that's driving past pissed off that he's late for work now, yelling, just jump already. And you know, it's like, okay, say if that guy did because of that, you know, is it was he gonna do it anyway, or did you saying that kind of help? And so it's a weird gray area. It was kind of like, at least I always found it was better to just ignore until that came up. And I was like, okay, well, I guess it's time we deal with this, especially because I hadn't seen a movie try to tackle that, because I don't think it's black and white.
No. It's certainly a very interesting subject matter. And yeah, no, there's definitely shades of gray there of how much can it contribute in terms of it might be the spark of something, even if it's not, or inspire something, even if it's not the entire thing, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
And I agree. I don't think it has been. I've not seen it previously. A movie kind of directly focusing on that.
And that was the part that interested me too. You know, okay, it just trying to present a movie in a way that hasn't been done, because, like I said, I get bored too. So it's kind of, if there's ways that we can challenge myself as well as audience members, even better.
It's intriguing that your degree is in philosophy, because it seems to somehow merge with that interesting kind of moral conundrums.
Mm-hmm. That don't seem to have answers.
No, just or seem to have lots of answers that might be, but not any definitive answers.
Yeah, it's just more about asking the question and being aware of the problem is maybe the better way to look at it. I do think that philosophy is an underutilized talent, because it certainly taught me not how to argue, but to just debate and listen to other people's opposing opinions without getting upset, you know, because it's important to hear those, whether you agree with them or not. it's important to always understand where people are coming from, I find.
Yeah, absolutely. I think engagement is the key. Probably more than ever, given you know what we're talking about fake news and people shouting at each other on the internet in very entrenched positions. Mm-hmm. Whether that be on movies or politics or culture, whatever it is.
Yeah, no, and that's the thing. It's like you can, I think you can have your ingrained ideas and philosophies, but I feel like there is a certain amount of empathy that's lacking in trying to understand where opposing views might be coming from, rather than just straight out saying, okay, we don't agree, time to be enemies. I just think that's we're kind of getting more separatist in that way, rather than trying to understand and just ask questions of one another.
A lot of problems could be solved with just a little bit more probing of the other position and a little bit more empathy.
Empathy is probably the best way to look at lots of solutions to a lot of problems.
It's absolutely true. It's interesting how these conversations sometimes go. You know, it's a horror movie podcast, but we've covered a lot of topics over the course of these episodes.
Well, isn't it? I always found that interesting, because it seems like, especially in the last couple of years, where horror movies have had their resurgence, I think people are starting to realize that they are a good platform for issues, whether they be personal or global. But it's still a way to do them subtly without throwing them in an audience's face or making them feel like you're preaching, while also remaining to the key point, which I still believe is, you know, entertaining. At the end of the day, you want to be entertained. But horror movies have always been that kind of sneaky way to make a statement. I think, I mean, George Romero's all of his Dead series was not about zombies. It was about people.
Yeah, and absolutely.
How they react, or, you know, the consumer cultures and Dawn of the Dead. It's like he's always trying to say something without throwing it in your face. And I think that's why horror movies are so accessible, is you can either just decide to sit down and want to be scared and entertained, or you can dig a little deeper and start getting into the philosophies of it all.
And it's interesting as well, because a lot of more mainstream critics seem to write as if this is a new thing in horror, that, you know, that a movie like Get Out or something, you know, it's like, it's new, it's horror, but it's got like a social commentary, or, you know, it's horror, but it's got more of a philosophical bent, you know, this is something new to this resurgence. But like you say, you know, things like Romero, there's been stuff like that for decades in horror that have swept in deeper issues or social commentaries.
Absolutely, yeah. I don't know what the answer to that is, whether it's that the mainstream critics are finally just actually sitting down and watching this stuff properly, or if you know, maybe there was a bit of a lull in the 90s where it became about, you know, just the spectacle of the splatter flick or something like that, where we did get away from that stuff for a little bit, which I still think has its place. I mean, at the end of the day, maybe the point is to distract people from all that stuff, and there's no better way to do that than watching a guy in a mask just chuck people off buildings or tear them in half. So,
I think there's a place for all horror, whether that be a guy running about chopping up teenagers, or it be one of the kind of so-called elevated horror. You know, that, I think there's a spectrum of horror, and they've all got their own place.
Absolutely. And that's and I think that's the best part, is no matter what, there's something in a horror movie that can be entertaining. a bad drama will be a bad drama, but a bad horror movie is still kind of awesome.
Absolutely. You know, there is nothing kind of better than watching a bad horror movie. For example, we've got an event in Edinburgh here called All Night Horror Madness, and they show a lot of quite bad horror movies, and watching a bad horror movie with a big group Containing bad one is a very fun thing, but you wouldn't watch a bad drama in a cinema with a large audience.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, aside from maybe The Room, that might be the only one.
Yeah, I mean there is that is always on tour, that movie.
Yeah. Well, I hate to do this to you, but I do have to catch a flight.
All right.
Quickly here, if that's all right.
Yeah, no, that is absolutely fine. I'd love to talk more about your various projects and your other project you've got in post-production, a boat movie, and all that. But if you got to go, you got to go. So we will wrap the interview up now, and hope to have you on again.
Absolutely. Appreciate it, Scott. And yeah, I'm down to talk anytime.
That was my guest, Rob Grant there, who I'd like to thank once again for being such a great interviewee. And hopefully we can get him on again sometime soon when he doesn't need to fly off as he did there. He was going to a film festival when this interview was recorded. Like last time, I would also like to give special thanks to a friend of the show, Mike Peterson, who put me in touch with Rob. And a final thank you to you, listener, for tuning in to this latest episode of New Horror Express. Be sure to tune in to the next episode of New Horror Express when we change tack a little bit. We've had a lot of film directors. It's been a while since we've delved into the world of horror literature. So that's what we will be doing next time as we chat to Justin Parks and Daniel Mark Chant from the Sinister Horror Company. Horror publishing imprint. So you can look forward to that. Plus, you can listen to all previous episodes of New Horror Express on iTunes and Stitcher, where we would be greatly appreciative if you rate, review, and subscribe to us. Our podcast is also available wherever good podcasts are found. Please also keep in mind you can give us a like on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. But that is all for now. I will see you next time.